Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market outlook. And this is Peter Schiff. I'm Peter Schiff, your host and the president of Euro Pacific Capital. Welcome aboard. Well, this is April the 13th, and a couple of days ago, Monday, the United States announced the biggest trade deficit ever, $61 billion. $61 billion of red ink racked up by American citizens in the month of February alone. This is a new all-time record high of a trade deficit for the United States, or for any country, for that matter, on planet Earth, $61 billion. And we were able to rack up that debt in just 28 days. Remember, February's only got 28 days. Imagine what we could have done if there were two or three more days in the month. And if you actually look at the price that we paid for imported energy, oil prices were actually quite a bit lower in February than they are today. So I think if you extrapolate a little bit, I think, and you add a few months, I think within the next couple of months, we're likely to see the trade deficit at $62 or $63 billion. And that's just for a month. I mean, what does that mean? What does a $61 billion trade deficit mean? You know, if you annualize that, you're talking $730 billion a year. That's three-quarters of $1 trillion. That means America is racking up $1.5 trillion of debt to the rest of the world every 2 years. $1.5 trillion. I mean, that's a staggering amount of money. I mean, if you really want to put it into perspective, think about it on a per capita basis. I mean, it's about $2,500 per person per year, or about $10,000 for a family of four. How can the average American family of four be going into debt to the tune of $10,000 a year to the Chinese and the Japanese and the Europeans? How can this be? And what do Americans have to show for all this money that they borrowed? Did they have a factory? Did they borrow it to create a business that's producing products? No, they borrowed it to consume. There's nothing there. There's no assets. Yeah, maybe they borrowed it to overpay for a house, but either they bought a house or they bought a television set or a car or they took a vacation, and now they owe all this money plus interest. And whatever we borrowed this year, we're going to borrow even more next year and even more at the year after that. So this is insane, and this is coming to an end very shortly, folks. And what you've got to make sure, right, and I've been talking about this, you know, actually last week's program I thought we had been doing this show for about 4 or 5 months. I've actually been doing it for over 8 months now. And so what I've been talking about for the past 8 months is the need to protect your wealth and understand that this movie is not going to end well, and that individuals need to take action to preserve their own wealth, and the only way to do that is to get out of the dollar before it's too late, to make sure that your savings are not denominated in the currency of the world's biggest debtor nation that is piling on three-quarters of $1 trillion in debt every year to consume. Meanwhile, our capacity to produce is diminishing with each passing month as we continue to shut down factories and they reopen in another country. This is a disaster happening in slow motion, but when the collapse comes, it's going to happen very rapidly, as all collapses do. And so you've got to make sure that you take advantage of the situation now. And we've actually had a rally in the dollar, you know, recently. I mean, it's nothing big. I mean, the dollar is no higher than it was a few months ago, but the dollar index is still hanging out around this 84 level. It's, you know, despite this record trade deficit on Monday, the dollar actually rallied. And I want to talk about the dynamics of that, because a lot of people are confused how we can come out with a record trade deficit, $2 billion higher than what the estimates had been, and the dollar actually strengthens on the back of it. I want to talk about that and the dynamics behind it. But people need to take advantage of that. You know, also we've seen some substantial weakness in the price of oil. Oil prices, which were up around $58 a barrel, are now back down around $51. And some of our favorite energy trusts that many of our clients own, and if you look at your statements this month, a lot of our clients will see, you know, for the first time in a while, a decline. Look at this decline as an opportunity. It's an opportunity for people to buy more of these high dividend paying assets at a cheaper price, because I think there's some very weak holders in some of these stocks that have gotten nervous recently and have sold. Or maybe it's not nervous. Maybe people own them on margin and been forced out. But in any event, these things are on sale. People have reacted, acting like oil is down to $30 a barrel. It's not. It's still above 50 and going higher. It's in a huge uptrend. But, you know, when you get in these uptrends, the corrections are very fierce. You know, bull markets climb a wall of worry. And a lot of people in the energy sector are worried. They're worried that the oil prices are going to fall. Take advantage of that nervousness, because it gives you an opportunity. If you're not fully invested and you want to commit more funds, which is my advice, it's an opportunity. And, you know, we have brokers standing by in my office now. I would suggest, if you don't own any of these investments, that you give us a call and find out if they're appropriate for you. Talk to one of my brokers about these energy trusts that have come under some pretty good selling pressure. I mean, they're not as cheap as they were a year or two ago, but they're cheaper than they were 2 or 3 months ago, when the price of oil was lower than it is now. So anyway, give us a call to talk to one of the brokers at Euro Pacific Capital about these investments and the other foreign investments that we recommend. The number is 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Also, to remind all the listeners that this is a call-in program, and I welcome and encourage your calls to ask me questions on any of the topics that we're discussing, to introduce new topics. If you're a current client, give me a call. Let me know if you're satisfied with the service that you get at Euro Pacific Capital, if you're satisfied with your account, or if you're not, just give me a call. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And if you're a potential client and you want to call and just find out a little bit more about the company, you know, feel free, 888-678-9597. For those of you who are listening on the Internet, the number is there on the screen. If you're on shortwave radio, this program is also broadcast live on my website at this time. My website is www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net, europac.net. And if you're a first-time listener to the program, that website has archives of all the shows that I've done for the last 8 months. You know, we've done 4 a week, so there's over 30 archive broadcasts on my website, and people can look and see the accuracy of the predictions, because basically I've been predicting all along that the trade deficit was going to get worse and worse. And of course, we've had several record trade deficits since I began doing this program, and now we have the most recent record of $61 billion. You know, $61 billion used to be a bad deficit for the year. Now we have it every month. And it's, as I said, it's going to get worse. You know, and all the experts have been out there predicting, and I put quotations around the word experts, that the weakness in the dollar is going to, on its own, cure the trade deficit. But it's not. See, it's not like, you know, when you go to the store, when you go over to Walmart, and you want to buy a toaster. There's a toaster made by an American company, and there's a toaster made by a foreign company. And right now, you buy the foreign toaster because it's cheaper, but that if the dollar would, you know, lose value, all of a sudden, the domestically made toaster would now be a better value, and so you would substitute the domestic product for the import, and the trade deficit would go down. See, it doesn't happen. When there are no American-made toasters, and the only toasters that you can buy are imported toasters, what difference does it make on the exchange value of the dollar? If the dollar goes down, you're still going to buy a foreign toaster. You're just going to pay more money for it. That's all. And so there is no substitution. We don't have the choice. And so as the dollar goes down, the trade deficit just gets bigger and bigger, because we have to pay more for our imports. And the problem is, the other problem is, the only way that we can ever produce more, of course, is we're going to have to build some factories to produce some products. How do you build factories? Well, you need capital. You need savings. Well, we don't have any. In fact, every month we go deeper into debt, so our ability to fund capital formation is diminished with each passing month, which means our trade deficit has to get bigger, because we don't have the ability to start producing the stuff ourselves. Now, ultimately, at some point, discipline is going to be forced upon the American citizens, because what's going to happen is foreigners are going to opt out of this parasitic relationship where they produce and we consume, they save and we borrow. And when they stop that, when they don't want to take the other side of that losing transaction, then a discipline is going to be forced upon America from without. Because what's going to happen is the dollar is going to plunge, consumer prices are going to skyrocket, interest rates are going to skyrocket, and asset prices in America, like stocks and real estate, are going to plunge. And what's going to happen is the average American is going to have his net worth turned upside down, because all of his assets are going to collapse in value, while servicing his debts are going to be much more burdensome as interest rates rise, and the cost of everything he needs to consume, from energy to food to clothing, you name it, it's going to get a lot more expensive for the average American consumer. And most Americans, to the extent they have a net worth right now, their net worth is going to be negative by a substantial amount. And what's going to happen is we're going to have discipline finally. Americans are going to stop consuming, not because they want to, but because they can't afford to consume, because everything's going to be too expensive for them to afford, and they're not going to be able to borrow. See, right now, Americans can buy whatever they want. Doesn't matter whether they can afford it or not, because they can put it on a credit card, or they can take out a home equity loan. But that's only possible because there's some saver in Japan or China or someplace else who's willing to provide the credit. It just doesn't come out of thin air. And once the people making this possible, the foreigners who are buying all this debt, once they don't want it anymore, then you can't reach out and use your credit card. The credit's not there. And you can't take out a loan against your house because the equity's not there anymore. And even if it was there, you couldn't afford to make the interest payments because the rates are going to be in the stratosphere. And so what's going to happen is Americans are going to consume a lot less. And finally, the trade deficit is going to go the other way because we're not going to be buying anything because we can't afford it. But in the short run, here's going to be the big, big problem for America. And this is why we're heading into a, you know, death spiral, you know, is that even though the trade deficit is going to be shrinking sharply because Americans will be too poor to afford anything, but the current account deficit is actually going to be rising, which is going to make the adjustment that much more painful. Because the problem is we owe trillions to the rest of the world, and we didn't do something smart and lock that debt up fixed for 20 or 30 years. No. Foreigners own all these T-bills, and right now we're paying them 2 and 3% interest on their short-term debt. But what happens under my scenario where the dollar collapses and interest rates surge, and all of a sudden the current short-term interest rates are 10% or 12% or 15%? Who knows? They got to 20% in 1980. Well, if we have to roll that debt over, and when all of a sudden this 2% debt matures, and if we want to roll it over, it costs us 10 or 20%, I mean, the current account deficit is going to explode. Because even though the trade deficit is shrinking, the net interest payments are going to go through the roof. We're going to have to spend a lot more money to service our debt. You know, and the bigger problem, I've mentioned this in the past, but back in the 1980s, right, when interest rates went up to 20%, a lot of Americans had to pay higher interest, and so that hurt their spending. But also, for every American paying higher interest, there was another American earning more interest on his savings. And so the people who were borrowing, their consumption went down, but the people who were saving, they were able to consume more because all of a sudden their CDs that used to pay 3 and 4% were paying 15 or 20%. They had a lot of disposable income. So the whole economy, I mean, certainly there was a change in who spent, but still there were Americans that were earning that income. Not so today, right? Today, all the debts or most of the debts are held externally. So when interest rates go up, Americans pay the higher interest, but foreigners earn the extra interest income. So it's a huge drain on America's spendable income. And when you've got an economy that's 80% spending and consumption, and all of that comes to an end, our GNP is just going to implode. We're not going to just have a recession where GNP contracts 1 or 2%. I mean, you're going to take 5 or 10 or 2 to 20% right off the GNP. Our economy is going to contract on a scale, you know, that we've never seen before. So people have got to get prepared for that. Anyway, let me give out the number. I know we've got a call on the line. Let me give out the number again to take your calls at Euro Pacific Capital. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And let's go ahead with the first call from our neighbor to the North, Canada. Joe, go ahead. Joe, you want to turn down your radio?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Schiff.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, it's Joe Johnson calling, sir. I just want to say that I really appreciate your insight over the last few years, and I want to know where you think the U.S. dollar is going, because I know from the get-go that you've been right about a lot of things.
I think the dollar is going to continue to fall. I mean, that's, you know, I think the lion's share of the declines for the dollar are still yet to come. I mean, the dollar has lost a lot of value between 2000 or 2001 and the present, but remember, it gained a lot of value between 1997 and 2000. So all the dollar did was give back the gains it never should have made on the back of the stock market and dot-com mania. But the dollar is still worth around the same as it was between around 1990 to 1995, despite the fact that our economy has degenerated so dramatically. Our whole industrial base has basically been, taken out from under us, and we've amassed trillions and trillions of debt that we didn't have, and we've printed a lot of money. So the dollar, the real decline in the dollar is yet to come. That's why I'm so adamant that I think people need to take advantage of this last opportunity, because I think we are in the last inning here. I think once the dollar cracks through its long-term support, and we're just right above that support right now, and it stands to reason that there would be some technical buyers and some speculators, and I want to talk about the speculators who are buying the dollar in this program, because it really explains what happened after the trade deficits. But once these speculators finish making their bets, and then we crash through those support, this thing is going to unravel quickly. And I look for the dollar. I think you can get cut in half in a very short period of time. And, you want to
get in on the Canadian dollar, Mr. Schiff.
Well, the Canadian dollar obviously is going to rise versus the U.S. dollar, because Canada doesn't have the problems that the United States has. I mean, they're not without problems, but they don't have as many. And I look for the Canadian dollar to make substantial gains against the U.S. dollar. But I do think the Canadian dollar could lose value against some of the Asian currencies, certainly. And the Canadian economy is a little bit, more dependent or tied to the U.S. economy, so Canadians can maybe have some disproportionate amount of problems associated with the real bankruptcy of the United States than other countries and economies that are less, less intertwined with the United States.
Okay. Well, thank you much. Thank you very much for your input, sir.
Thanks for the call. Keep listening to the program.
I will. I really love it. I think it's a great program.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to really spend a lot of time today talking about the speculators that are in the dollar. You know, I've mentioned this before. The statistics show that there's the most bullishness on the dollar in 2 years. And there are more people betting the dollar is going to go up than betting that it's going to fall. And the interesting thing about this group of dollar speculators is that one of the reasons that they're buying is they're all convinced that they're in the minority and they're taking a contrarian trade. But, it's impossible for a majority of the people to be contrarians. But this is apparently has been lost on these dollar bulls who are basing their bullishness in part on the contrarian aspect of it, not even realizing that the majority of people also think they're being contrarian. But one of the rather simplistic reasons that a lot of the speculators are willing to bet that the dollar is going to rise is because they think that the dollar will benefit from higher U.S. interest rates that will continue to increase. And I think that's a very naive and short-sighted approach, because the people who are betting on stronger, on higher interest rates helping the dollar are making two fatal flaws in their argument. One, yes, interest rates are rising, but it's nominal rates that are rising. Real rates are not rising. Real rates are actually falling as the Fed falls further and further behind the inflation curve. And nominal rates mean nothing. It's real rates that count. And so real rates are not rising. So the dollar is not getting any more attractive. But probably more importantly than that, the people who are betting that higher interest rates will help the dollar are underestimating the negative impact higher interest rates will have on the U.S. economy. And by undermining the U.S. economy and reducing growth, that's going to hurt the dollar. Because the relative growth, right now people are looking at the United States and they're saying we're growing faster than Europe and Asia. But once interest rates move up a bit, we're going to be in a recession. And we're going to be contracting a lot faster than Europe and Asia. And so on a relative basis, the U.S. is going to look very unattractive. And I think you're going to see a lot of capital flight out of the United States. So higher interest rates are not going to be what helps the dollar. higher interest rates are going to put the nail in the dollar's coffin. But in any event, right now, people could take advantage of all these foolish speculators that are gambling with borrowed money that the dollar is going to rise and sell them your dollars. Because the more dollar speculators that come into the market, the easier it is for us to get rid of our dollars now. And unfortunately, the faster the dollar is going to collapse once those speculators look for the exits. Because when they try to get out, I don't know who's going to be there to take the other side of their trade. They're hoping, I guess, that it'll be central banks. But maybe the central banks will have come to their senses by then, and there'll be nobody to buy those dollars. But anyway, I want to pause, take a quick break to play a message from Euro Pacific Capital with some information about my company and how to get a hold of us, and then we'll pick up for your phone calls and more of the program on the other side of the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And again, let me give out the telephone number to call the program for your questions and comments. It's 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. And I welcome your calls, and the lines are open, so feel free to call. And it's better to get your calls in now rather than waiting till the end of the program when we need to quickly move on. But anyway, getting into the market action surrounding the release of the worse-than-expected record trade deficit for February of $61 billion, after an initial knee-jerk decline, the dollar started to decline, right away it reversed, and by the end of the day, the dollar had risen rather sharply intraday. I mean, then by the end of the day, there was some profit taking, but not the reaction you would expect, right? You would expect from a record trade deficit that is much worse than the forecast, you would expect the dollar to fall. But it didn't happen that. It didn't work out that way. Now, here's what happened, in my opinion. I mean, if you look at the 2 days prior to that Monday, if you look at Thursday and Friday, On Thursday morning, the dollar was at the high end of its trading range. And then it's abruptly reversed. And Thursday and Friday were two pretty big down days for the dollar. So by Monday, by the time that trade deficit was released, the dollar was at the higher end of its trading range for the past couple of weeks. It's certainly lower. The dollar is higher than it had been, a month ago. But in this new range that we've been trading in, it was at the high end of that range. And I think what happened is many of the dollar speculators, many of the people who have been buying the dollar, since the dollar was right on the highs, right, on Thursday, knowing that the trade deficit was coming out 2 days from now, I think some of the dollar bulls wanted to square their positions going into that trade deficit, because I think they didn't want to be long the dollar with a potential trade deficit that could be very bad. And so I think they squared their positions ahead of that number, taking advantage of the fact that the dollar was on its highs. Now, what happened is when that final number was released and it was a bad trade deficit and the dollar went down a little bit, I think these speculators were now reestablishing their dollar positions by buying dollars back that they had sold in advance of the trade deficit. And again, it's kind of the buy on the rumor, sell on the fact. So they people sold the dollar in anticipation that the trade deficit could be bad, and then they bought the dollar back when the trade deficit was, in fact, announced and it was bad. But again, I think these are speculators in the dollar who were trying to have long positions, who are betting that the move in interest rates is going to be the bigger factor, not the increasing current account trade deficit. And I think these speculators came back, and I think ultimately it's a very negative sign for the dollar that it has so many fans and so many people gambling on its appreciation. Meanwhile, there isn't any significant appreciation, and these longs have been establishing these positions, and I think they're going to be very uncomfortable once we really start to break down technically, and they need to reassess their bets and maybe look to square their positions. But it's more of a buy the rumor, sell the fact. And I also think it's interesting that we can announce such a bad trade deficit and the dollar doesn't collapse because so few people are paying attention to it. You know, one of the commentators on CNBC, when the number came out, said, and maybe jokingly on his part, the trade deficit, you know, the most important number that we get every month now. Now, I think it's the most important number that we get every month, but the market doesn't seem to think that. We got a huge trade deficit. The stock market didn't go down. It went up that day. And the dollar didn't even go down. I mean, back when people really cared about the trade deficit in the mid to you know late 1980s or early 90s, a bad trade deficit, I mean, would destroy the dollar, would get crushed. I mean, crushed. And the Dow, I remember the Dow would fall 100 points or more when the Dow was 2,000. I mean, 100 points, that was 5% of bad trade deficit. The Dow could get clipped 5%. You know, we would see the Swiss franc or the Deutschmark, you know, up 200, the Japanese yen up 300 points. I mean, huge moves when a bad trade deficit came out because people really understood and appreciated the problems inherent in bad trade deficit. Today, it should take it in stride. It's a disaster, and no one really cares. Well, pretty soon, people are going to start to care. But what I'm suggesting that you do as a saver or my clients is you got to care now. You got to care before everybody else cares. You know, I mean, right now, sure, there are a number of people talking about the weakness of the dollar, but very few people are doing anything about it. Very few people. You know, the overwhelming majority of Americans, even if they have an opinion on the dollar, even if they think it's going to go down, they've done nothing about it. They don't think it affects them in any way. They don't think they have to do anything about it. You got to act now before the rest of America wakes up to the fact that that is a problem and that they do need to protect themselves, because for then it'll be too late. Anyway, we've got a call on the line from Maryland. Go ahead, George.
Hi, Peter. You think the trade deficit's bad now? Wait till they pass this FTAA. What's your comment about that? That's like NAFTA on steroids.
Well, what is it? What is the FTAA?
Oh, the Free Trade Area of Americas?
Yeah, what's that going to do?
Well, basically, what they want to do is it'll be like a copy of the European Union. It's going to be a regional government from Canada down to Argentina with the borders just wide open. You don't know anything about that?
I mean, I'm all in favor of wide open borders and no barriers because I want free trade. The problem is, right now, our trading partners are so foolish that they think the dollars that we're exporting represent something. And, see, that's why we're able to we're able to import all this stuff without exporting, is because people forget that, you know, the dollar doesn't have the value. So ultimately, when the dollar collapses, you know, free trade is going to be a positive thing. But, you know, certainly in the short run, eliminating these barriers will probably make the trade deficit even bigger because we can still export dollars for goods. Now, I had a conversation with a reporter again today, and again had to make the point. You know, he was worried, you know, talking about how other countries were going to suffer when their currencies got stronger because their exports would suffer. And I had to remind them that nobody exports to export. You only export to import. That's the only reason you export something, is to import something else. You don't export for the sake of exporting. You export something that you produce efficiently so that you can exchange those products for something that somebody else produces more efficiently than you do. So the whole goal of exports is so you can import more. And when your currency goes up, it means that you can buy your imports cheaper, and that's a positive. So a strengthening currency is always a positive for the people who own it, and a weakening currency is always a negative. It's just the politicians in Washington that tries to convince the world that a weak currency is good, which, of course, it makes sense, right? We want to convince the rest of the world that something that benefits us and hurts them is actually good for them, you know? And sure, if you're trying to rip somebody off, it makes sense to try to convince them that what you're actually doing is good for them because it makes it easier to rip them off. So we've got the world suckered and convinced into thinking that having their currency lose value against the dollar, meaning that we get richer than them, that somehow that's good for them because it lets us buy more of their stuff, which means they have less and we have more. You know, it's an insane world, and it's amazing. And I think a lot of the you know, people, you know, propaganda ministers from history would be very impressed at what America's been able to pull off and how much wool we've been able to pull over the world's eyes for how long we've been able to do it.
Do you feel eliminating the borders throughout the Western Hemisphere and having a free flow of people, services, and products is would be positive for America?
I think it would be positive for everybody. You know, I mean, I just think that government should not interfere with the rights of their citizens to trade with citizens of other countries. I just think that the less regulation that you have, is the better. But the only problem is right now, America's economy is not operating under normal, free market rules. We're operating in some kind of parallel universe or some, because we're not actually trading with anybody. We're just printing money. We're just printing pieces of paper and giving them and consuming. We're not producing and consuming. We're just consuming. We're not borrowing and saving. We're just borrowing. I mean, by and large. I mean, so once the economy in the United States collapses and we make the long and hard return to economic viability, which means Americans start producing again and start saving again, and it's going to be difficult and it's going to require a very substantial a reduction in the standard of living of all Americans for a long time, we'll be back into a situation where, you know, we're trading again with the world. We're not trading right now. We're ripping them off. If you go into a store and you buy products, but you pay for them with a check that's going to bounce, you didn't really buy their products. You stole them. And we're basically stealing goods from the rest of the world. We're not trading. We're stealing. The thing is that our trading partners don't realize that we're stealing from them because they think our worthless IOUs, they think our checks are going to clear. They don't know that they're going to bounce. But anyway, I appreciate your call. Are you a client of ours yet?
Bruce is processing my file right now, so I will be, yes.
Good job. How did you initially hear about us? Was it through the program or through another source?
Yeah, shortwave.
Shortwave. All right, good. So at least I know that it's working. People are.
I've been recording your shows and handing them out to everybody, so anybody that will listen, that is.
Well, keep appreciate it, and so will they. I mean, I think anybody that you send our way and we help protect them and preserve their wealth will be very grateful for everybody involved in the process. But anyway, keep up the good work, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you, Peter.
Sure. Yeah, I'm always glad to find that people have listened to this program and have opened up accounts with us because, I mean, that is the main goal here. I mean, just talking to people and educating them, and it's fine. But if they don't actually do anything, right, what good is it? I mean, what good is it to understand that why you're going to go broke, but go broke anyway? I mean, that's just, you might as well not even have this information. The key is to act on it. The key is to preserve your wealth, not watch it evaporate. And I said this before, you know, the people who are going to be the most pissed off, right, when this happens are going to be the people who knew about it. See, the average American is so clueless. He's going to just feel he got shafted by the powers that be. You know, he's going to know this was out of his control. It's going to be, there's nothing I could have done. Nobody could have predicted this. Nobody could have known that anything like this could have happened. It's everybody's in the same boat, and there was nothing I could have done. So those people aren't going to be, aren't going to be having sleepless nights thinking, why didn't I do something? It's the people who knew the information, people who maybe were listening to my program and agreed and said, that Peter makes some sense. I think he's right. And then you did nothing about it. That's what keeps people up at night. The fact that you have the opportunity to do something to protect yourself and you let it slip through your fingertips. So people have got to take action. That's what counts. It's not thinking, it's doing, it's acting. And fortunately, we're doing all the hard part. It's very simple. All you got to do is open up an account and fund it, and we'll take care of the rest. We'll find you the right investments, and we'll help you buy them. I got brokers here who can communicate this to you, who are knowledgeable, and who can help, tailor make a portfolio to you consistent with your goals and your needs. But give us a call. That's the first step in the process. You got to call us and initiate the process, and we'll take it from there. It's 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. And that's the number for your Pacific Capital, and there are brokers here now, and so you don't even have to wait till the program ends. You can call And by the time the program is over, your account can be set up and you can be ready to go. Anyway, I know we've got another caller that just came in. Keith is on the line from South Dakota. Go ahead, Keith.
Yes, Peter.
Hey, how are you?
I really want to start an account. My situation is I have no debt, no real savings, but I own my own house. And I was wondering what you would suggest would be the best thing to do.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not really that sure what the real estate market is like in South Dakota. But I'm sure it's nothing like Southern California. But the advice I give to a lot of people, and it depends on your local market and what the rents are, but a lot of times I tell people to sell their house and rent, because the amount you can get for your house right now is so high relative to the inexpensive cost of renting these days that that's a very good financial decision that you can make. Then what we can do is we can take the money that you get from selling your house and invest it into some conservative foreign assets that will generate enough income to pay that rent, so you live rent-free. Then when the dollar collapses and the real estate bubble bursts, you can take a fraction of that money that's in these foreign assets and use it to buy back the same house or a much nicer house for less money.
Right.
Alternatively, you can look at ways of taking advantage of the fact that you can get a 30-year loan at less than 6%, maybe get a little debt against that house, use that money to buy foreign safe conservative assets that maybe are paying 7, 8, or 9% so that you can have a carry trade where you're earning 8%, you're borrowing at 6%, and get some money out of the country. Now, that's a strategy that's not without risk, and you really got to look at all the potential risks and rewards before you consider something like that. You need to talk to one of our brokers. And if you don't have any savings, I would start saving, and I would start accumulating something, and do it in foreign currency, though. Don't bother saving U.S. dollars, because by the time you go to spend them, you won't be able to buy anything. So it's an exercise in futility. But if you go and save some foreign assets, you'll be in good shape.
Right. I see the waterfall coming. I just...
And now, if you have any retirement savings, if you have any money in an IRA or anything like that, we can work with those accounts as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so you can transfer in an IRA, and, you know, we can get it invested in foreign assets.
Right. Well, I'm going to get going on something here soon. I just wanted to hear what you...
All right. Well, the sooner the better. You know, time is your enemy when it comes to getting rid of the dollar.
Absolutely.
Taking time bomb, I don't know how long the fuse is. I know it's going to blow at some point, and I don't want it to blow while it's in my hand. So just get rid of it as quickly as you can.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
Okay. All right, I know we've got Joan on the line from New York. Go ahead, Joan.
Yes, I was just wondering if you think that real estate is overvalued right now.
What do you think?
Well, yeah, but what else, if you sell them, where do you live?
You rent. That's what I'm doing. I just moved to your part of the country. I'm living just outside of New York in Connecticut. And I'm renting a house. And my rent is about $7,000 a month is what I'm paying. But if I were to buy that residence in the current market, I would be paying somewhere between $2.5 and $3 million to own that house. Now, if you take a look at, you know, just take the lower end of that, $5 million. If I'm renting that house for $7,000 a month, multiply it by 12, that's $84,000, divided by $2.5 million, that house is renting for about 3.3% of its value, which is pretty low. I mean, I'm earning on my investments, I'm getting dividend yields of 8 or 9%, and that's without costs. See, my landlord has a lot of costs. He's got to pay maybe $50,000 a year in property taxes. You know, he's got to pay just a month ago, some pipes burst, and they had to come in there, and they had to have the plumbers in there, and they had to cut into the wall. Now, I don't know what that cost the guy, $5,000 or $10,000. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that the guy that owns my house is earning a less than a 1% return on the investment, which is, I mean, it's ridiculous. Alternatively, he sold his house instead of renting it to me, and sent me the $2.5 million, and I put it into a foreign portfolio of dividend-paying assets, even earning 8%. He would get $200,000 a year income. Instead, right now, he's probably getting, net of fees, net of his taxes and everything, he's probably clearing about $25,000 a year on that house by renting it to me. If he sold it and sent me the money, he can make $200,000 a year in income. It's overvalued. It's just like looking at, it's any, you know, and of course, what's keeping real estate so overvalued right now is that anybody can buy it. You know, it's actually easier now to buy a house and rent an apartment. I mean, I've read all these articles, like here in California, that said the typical landlord requires that you earn three times your rent. So if your rent is $2,000 a month, right, that means that's $24,000 a year. The landlord wants you to earn $72,000 before he rents you the apartment. But a bank will let you earn $50,000. The banks only require that your income is twice your mortgage. And landlords normally want a first and a last and a security deposit. You can buy a house today with zero down. So it's easier for somebody with no money and bad credit and low income to buy a house than rent an apartment. That's why prices are so ridiculous. You know, people can, in where I am in California, last year, half of the mortgages were interest only. Half of them. Half. People aren't even making principal payments. I mean, there's no difference between having an interest-only mortgage and renting because you're not paying anything down. And then 85% of the people use adjustable-rate mortgages. And a lot of those people probably had interest-only adjustable-rate mortgages, and many of them put zero down. And so the fact that banks are throwing money at people, anybody with a heartbeat who can sign a form can borrow money to buy a house, it's no wonder that the prices are so high. And no one is worried about anybody repaying these loans. And people think that the prices are going to go through the roof. You know, I read the statistic down in something like 7,000 condos sold last year in the Miami Beach area, 7,000 condos. You know how many condos are under construction right now in Miami Beach?
No. Double?
1,000. 50,000. And the ones that they sold last year, they're all empty. I mean, this article I was writing about was like it's like a ghost town because no one is buying these condos to live in them. They're buying them to speculate on the appreciation. But they can't rent them out. There's just a glut of them. Look, this is a huge collapse. This is no different than the dot-com bubble. And if people try to tell you that real estate is different than stocks, it's the same thing. The only thing is people didn't borrow this much money to buy stocks. People didn't buy stocks with zero down. There is more speculation in real estate than there is in stocks, and the crash of the real estate market is going to be a lot worse than what we had in the stock market, and of course its implications on the economy and the banking system are going to be far more severe than the unwinding of the NASDAQ bubble.
Hmm.
Do you live in the city or near state?
I'm sorry?
Where in New York do you live?
I'm in Manhattan.
Would you own your apartment there?
No, rent.
All right, well, if you own one, I would say sell it because the average apartment now is now $1.2 million in Manhattan. Apartments are selling for over $900,000 a square foot. That means like a 1,000 square foot apartment is almost $1 million. If you own one, I would definitely tell you to sell it for sure. And if you're renting, just don't buy. Whatever you do, keep renting. And if you can get your money, I think that real estate is going to drop by 90% in terms of foreign currency. That's what I think is going to happen, 90% in places like Manhattan. So I think a house that's right now, apartment that's $1 million, I think if someone put $100,000 today in a conservative portfolio of safe foreign assets, that I think that portfolio and that apartment will have the same value at the bottom. And so rather than paying $1 million for the apartment now, take the $100,000 and buy some foreign assets and wait, and then when you can exchange that portfolio for the apartment and own it for free without a mortgage. You know, I'm not alone in this. You know, John Templeton, who is a very, very successful investor, a billionaire living in the Bahamas now, he's predicting a 90% collapse in the value of U.S. real estate. And that's what happens when bubbles burst. Bubbles just don't go down by 10 or 20%. They usually fall by 80 to 90% or more. And this is a bubble, particularly in the high-priced markets. I don't think we have a real estate bubble in Iowa, for example, but we certainly have a real estate bubble in places like California, New York, Florida, you know, Nevada. There are bubbles around the country. Unfortunately for the economy, the bubbles are concentrated in the areas where property values are the highest. So it's going to bring down the whole banking system because we're bubbles where people are paying. You know, a friend of mine just sold his place here just last week. He sold it in one day. It's a small townhome inland, not even on the beach or anything. You can't, no view of the water. He bought it for $300,000 about 6 years ago and just sold it in one day for $1.1 million.
Wow.
two-income couple. I think there's a policeman and a real estate broker married, you know, two incomes. But real middle-class family. I mean, what's a middle-class? So the average middle-class family with two is paying $1.1 million to buy a little townhouse?
Yeah.
Business. I mean, why should a house that was worth $300,000, you know, 4 or 5 years ago? Yeah, they spent about $50,000 making it a little nicer. But why should $50,000 in upgrades make the house worth $1.1 million?
It doesn't make sense.
They're equally convinced that in a few years it'll be $1.5 million. Now, I read this article in the New York Times over the weekend entitled "A Mogul in the Making." Mogul in the Making, and it was about a 22-year-old kid who was buying his third or fourth apartment in New York City. And basically, what his advice to other would-be moguls was: don't worry about overpaying for real estate. He said, whatever the offer is, just pay more. And don't be afraid to get in a bidding war, because whatever you pay, even if you think it's expensive, just wait 6 or 12 months, and it'll be a bargain. No matter what you pay, it's going to be worth more in the future. And he talked about how, since he was so successful, that six of his friends who used to be renters now bought their apartments, because they can do it with nothing down, and everybody's convinced that the road to riches lies not in hard work or in savings, but just in owning a home. That just houses used to be regarded as a liability. They cost money. I mean, they're nice to own, but they're an expense. You have to pay them. You have to pay the mortgage. You have to pay the maintenance. Today, people look at houses as a source of income. That you actually earn money. You get paid to own a house mentality. So this is the biggest housing bubble ever, and just, you know, stay out of it. And when it collapses, it's going to have repercussions for the entire economy. Value of the dollar, and that's one of the other reasons that I'm telling my clients and suggesting you that, you know, you want to get your money out of U.S. currency, because there are a lot of consequences from the implosion of this housing bubble.
Okay, thank you.
Well, appreciate your listening, and are you a client yet?
No, just interested.
Well, give us a call. You know, it's 800-7922. Brokers here, don't procrastinate it, because if you procrastinate too long, it could be too late, because once the dollar collapses, you know, you can't turn back the clock. It's your opportunity to protect yourself will be gone.
Thank you.
Okay, Joan. We got another call from that tri-state area. We got Mike on the line from New Jersey. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, this is Mike from New Jersey. I was wondering how you can make money on the downside in real estate. I mean, I didn't hear the whole broadcast, but I mean, outside of selling your house and renting, is there a way to make money from the falling prices of real estate? And
well, I mean, you can try to be short, let's say, some of the companies that are involved in the building of homes or involved in the financing of homes. And so you could try to invest in markets in assets or short assets where you're going to benefit from their decline. But the safest and easiest way to benefit from a housing crash is do what you're doing, is rent. And you see, what's going to happen when assets crash, right? Prices go from being very overvalued to being very undervalued. See, what's going to happen in the real estate market is all of a sudden there's going to be lots of sellers, right? Everyone's going to have their house on the market. There's going to be a lot of foreclosures, a lot of forced sales. There's going to be a lot of houses on the market. But at the same time, there's going to be very few buyers, because everybody who wants a house already owns a house, if not two or three. And so what's going to happen is there's going to be an oversupply of houses and no buyers. And even if people, and very few people will be able to buy, even if they wanted to, because they wouldn't have the money, and they won't be able to qualify for the mortgage because rates will be a lot higher. So if you can set aside some money now and get it into something safe in a foreign currency, the way you're going to benefit is all of a sudden, let's say a house that's, you know, let's say it take $1 million, a place is selling for $1 million, and let's say it's really worth $300,000. Well, for a brief period of time, you might be able to buy that house for $100,000 before it finally settles back down to the $300,000 it's actually worth, because things go from one extreme to another. The pendulum swings as out of whack in one direction as it does in the other. So as ridiculous as prices are now, as insanely expensive as they are, they're going to get insanely cheap. And they're not going to stay that cheap. But if you're in a unique position of having liquidity, particularly liquidity in foreign assets, you will be able to take advantage of some bargains of a lifetime. I mean, that's what I intend to do. I mean, I intend, and my wife and I'm looking forward to being able to buy a house and buy a vacation place and maybe buy an apartment in the city. I mean, maybe buy four or five places, because there's going to be an opportunity to get some real estate that we can own forever without a mortgage and get it real cheap.
What kind of time frame are you looking at for maybe not the peak, but we're probably close to the peak, but for the next throw down.
I don't know. This thing has gone on a lot longer than it should have, and I think right now we're in the final euphoric stage of it. I think what's happening right now is as interest rates are rising, a lot of fence sitters or a lot of people are being encouraged by the real estate community to hurry up and buy because the realtors are saying if you wait much longer, the rates will be too high and you won't be able to afford the house.
Right.
The mistake that these people are making is that when rates are a lot higher, prices will be a lot lower. But the real estate agents can't get that in their mind. They think there's no way real estate prices will go down. So what they think is that when interest rates go up, people just won't be able to afford to buy. But what they don't understand is if people can't afford to buy, then nobody can sell. You can't sell a house if people can't afford to buy it. So the prices are going to plunge. And rather than just saying, well, I want to buy now while rates are low, you have to buy while prices are high. And the way to get a bargain, it's not rocket science, right? If you want to buy something cheap, you've got to buy something that nobody else wants. You've got to buy at a time where everybody else is convinced that what you're buying is no good. Or you got to buy when there's a lot of sellers. So you want to have an oversupply of sellers and a minimal number of buyers to bid against you. Well, that doesn't describe real estate. Right now, everybody agrees that real estate can only go up. And there's nobody wants to sell because why would you sell an asset that only goes up? And why sell a house? You can borrow all the money against it without selling it. You can have your cake and eat it too. You can go to a bank and whatever your house is worth, they'll lend you all that money. You don't have to sell it. You don't have to sell it to get out. You get your money, and then if it goes up, you win both ways. You can get your money without selling and profit from going up. So everybody agrees real estate is going to only go up. No one wants to sell it. Everybody wants to buy it. The price has to be high. It can't not be high under those circumstances. So what you've got to do is be patient. Patience is what wins out in investing, and if you're trying to buy and sell. All you got to do is be patient. And I know that's easier said than done, especially if you're married, because we're having a lot of stress on this in my house. But patience will be rewarded, just like it was for my clients who were patient and sat out the dot-com mania. We kept their clients out of that. We invested safely. And for 1998 and 99, my clients didn't do very well, relative to people who bought all these Internet stocks. But by 2002, 2003, our accounts had done phenomenally well, including the 2 years of 98 and 99, and other people had lost it all. Even though on paper, people in the mania thought they were making money in 98 and 99, they gave it all back, and in the end of the day, they didn't make any dividends, and they lost whatever the principal was. So same thing's going to happen in the real estate market. Just be patient. And if you can be patient with an account at Euro Pacific Capital and get your money out of the dollar, you're going to have highly appreciated currencies with which to bid on highly depreciated real estate.
That sounds good. I was wondering, living in America and wanting to buy some foreign assets, outside of buying these foreign ADRs and the actual foreign currencies like euros, how do you actually buy?
Yeah, that's what we specialize in, and we don't do the ADRs. The best companies don't have ADRs here, the best ones to buy. We buy the ordinary shares. We buy them direct on the foreign exchanges. That's what we're specializing in. And, I'm not recommending foreign stocks because I specialize them. I'm specializing in them because that's what I recommend. I had to reorganize my company a few years ago in line with my changing thinking on U.S. assets. But anyway, just give us a call. It's 800-727-7922, and I've got brokers who will help explain to you exactly how to do this.
Right. What is it, 800-727-7922. Thanks for your time.
And appreciate your listening and look forward to having you as a client. Now we've got a few more callers on the line, so I wouldn't suggest anybody call in anymore. We've got three callers on hold and only about seven more minutes left to go. So let me try to take these last calls. Now we've got four callers on the line. I don't know. But anyway, Jason's on the line from Canada. Go ahead, Jason.
Hello?
Jason, are you there?
Hello?
Robert from Canada.
Robert Wilson.
Excuse me?
Who am I talking to?
This is Peter Schiff. Who's on the line?
Schiff, yeah. Robert Wilson, Ontario.
Hey, Robert. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm good. What's your question or your comment?
What do you think about the price of oil?
Well, I think it's going higher. I talked about that at the beginning of the program. It's dropped recently from a high of 57, 58 down to around 51. When I first started this broadcast 8 months ago, oil was still in the 30s, and I was predicting that it would go to $50, $60, $100, and that's still going to happen. I think that we're in a huge bull market. I think we're early in the bull market. Now, in terms of Canadian dollars, I don't think oil is going to go up nearly as much as it will in terms of U.S. dollars.
What happens?
The rise in the price of oil is going to be strictly a function of the falling value of the dollar.
Supply and demand.
Exactly. And the lower the dollar gets, since
think about when dollars. Like I sort of work in the brokerage business. When oil was George Bush, the president of the United States, got in power, it was around 18, 19, 20 bucks a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
That major conflict of interest with some individuals figuring, I thought my mind would go to a minimum of 50. He's been in power for...
Well, I think we're going a lot higher, and that's why, you know, I love these oil and gas trusts up in Canada, and we've been buying them from our clients, and a lot of them have come back down in price recently, and rather than being nervous about it, it's just a great opportunity, I think, for people to add to their positions or accumulate positions if they don't have any.
Precision drillings.
Oil and gas trusts, just give us a call. You know, we'll educate you on them and tell you how they work, and... You know, we've been buying these stocks for clients for 4 or 5 years, and they've been very, very good performers.
What do you think about gold?
I'm bullish on gold. I mean, we sell, you know, we recommend gold bullion. We recommend the Perth Mint, which is how we sell bullion to our clients. It's a program that allows you to buy and sell your gold at close to the spot price and have it stored for free in a government-owned mint in Australia. I think it's the best program out there for gold ownership. And to learn about it, you know, visit my website at www.europac.net. We talk a lot about the Perth Mint, or give us a call at 800-727-7922 and tell one of my brokers that you're interested in the Perth Mint.
Okay.
I will appreciate your call and look forward to having you on board as a client.
Possibility.
Well, let's make it a reality. Talk to you. Thanks for listening.
Work on that. Thank you.
Anyway, apparently the lines are all clear. I don't know what happened. There were a few callers on hold, or maybe there was some mix-up. But anyway, we're getting, you know, close to the end of the program in any event. And, you know, I'm not really even sure what the economic data is coming up in the week ahead. I mean, I have been very busy. You know, I've been going back and forth between the East and West Coast. I'm here on the West Coast again. You know, I'll be back on the East Coast next week, and you know, we're still in the process of opening up the East Coast office, and I'm still trying to run the West Coast office, and we've got a lot of improvements in store for everybody. Working on a client newsletter, and working on a book, and working on expanding our sales force here, and introducing some new proprietary products. So we've got a lot of good things in the works, and they'll be revealed to you as they come about. But in the meantime, you know, continue to check the websites daily, you know, www.europac.net. I always put my economic commentaries on there. Every day I put new stories on there that I think are relevant. So always try to make a point of visiting the site, checking out your account, looking at the news stories. Meantime, try to spread the word on this program. You know, I'm trying to build the audience up, tell people to listen to Wall Street Unspun, you know, tell them about the shortwave station or the website. We need to get as many Americans as we can to get educated and to understand what's going on. In the meantime, until next week, I'll be here the same time, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. This has been Peter Schiff, your host and the president of Euro Pacific Capital. See you next week.